Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. And today I'm excited because I have an old friend join us. Keith Santis is going to be here in the studio with us and having a conversation about really kind of the life of an independent sales rep. And that's kind of the overall theme, but really the guts of it are, how do you adapt? How do you change? How do you deal with when things change in your business? How do you deal with things when things are out of your control? And how do you pick up the pieces and continue to move forward? And Keith has dealt with that from an independent rep agency standpoint for a many number of years. So he's got a lot of wisdom to share with you. I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break. Oh, yeah.
All right, Keith, welcome to the Coffee Break Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You're the first guest that we've had.
First today.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, but a few weeks ago we were meeting in our conference room. You had come by to visit and chat, and there was a couple of stories that you were sharing that I'd never heard before, and I didn't realize some of the history that you had and some of the progress that you've made throughout the years. And so it just kind of hit me like it would be really interesting to have a conversation about for the podcast, because I think it's very applicable to any business, right? And yep. So I want to kind of dive into that for our conversation today.
Sure, absolutely.
So we appreciate you coming in. Before we do that, obviously we have rapid fire, 5 randomly selected questions just to get under your skin.
Okay.
With unknown point values.
All right.
So are you ready?
Shoot. Let's go.
Question number 1, what did you get in the most trouble for as a kid?
Okay, well, number of things, obviously, but one thing that's always stuck in my mind was having just received, I believe, my driver's permit and was in the neighborhood kind of showing off for the kids, and had a couple, I said, come on in, let me show you how I can drive and drive around the neighborhood a little bit, and I decided to put it in reverse and mm-hmm. wasn't quite skilled yet at how much pedal pressure to apply towards reverse, and ended up heading down an embankment into a neighbor's yard, tearing it up, hitting a tree, damaging the car, and also my relationship with my parents for a few days after that.
Yeah, it's funny hearing you say that, because I think the biggest element of that is if you would have been by yourself, it probably would have been as bad.
Would have never been reported.
Well,
but
you may not have actually gone to that extreme. I can remember a couple times as a kid, it's like I was learning to do something, or maybe I remember one time we had a three-wheeler back before they were outlawed, but and I would drive it around and kind of got comfortable with it, and then it was like the cousins were there. Hey, watch what I can do because I know how to drive this, and then it's roll the thing over. It's just you get a little extra.
A little hubris, maybe. Yeah. I'm gonna show out now, and it came back to bite me. It's a lesson learned for sure.
There you go. All right, number 2. What's the craziest thing on your bucket list?
Well, I don't really subscribe to the whole bucket list concept, because I'd like to have an open-ended view of my life, and I would say it would be to take a family cruise in the Mediterranean, around Italy and Greece and historic sites and islands and just the whole tropical, that beautiful area. I think that would be a bucket list, my number one bucket list item right now for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's on my bucket list, but it's definitely a conversation we've had multiple times about the Mediterranean. I think it would just really be a cool place to visit, and especially from a cruise ship.
Yeah, because it's a cruise ship is not ideal if you are going. I've been to Greece, so I would know if you're going to Greece, you don't want to do it on a cruise ship. You want to go to the islands and immerse yourself or go to certain cities and immerse yourself. But a cruise ship, since I've already been to that area, would allow me to see the most locations and the most historical sites in, say, a two-week period. So
would you do one that crossed the Atlantic, or would you fly there?
No, I'd fly there and then do the cruise.
Yeah, I don't know that I could get
down. I think the less time you spend on boats and planes, at least for right now, is probably beneficial.
It is funny that we're talking about cruise ships right now. They're all parked out in the middle of the ocean.
You should be able to get pretty good deals on them, so it might not be a bad idea to...
I'm going
to
make a note of that.
Get your hazmat suit and go, and head out.
All right, number three, what's the most random thing in your wallet?
Random thing. I concealed carry permit, although I don't, my wallet is kind of small, so I only put specific things in there. So there's not a lot of random stuff in there.
Be very selective in what you put in your wallet.
I think so. Yeah. Because you may have to show it. You have to show it a lot more these days than ever before.
Everywhere
you go, you got to open it up. So
yeah, I, that was one of the biggest changes, was getting down to a thinner wallet or a smaller wallet. It was like, I from a bifold or whatever, you know, and then you have all this stuff in there. It's like, I don't even know why in the world I'm carrying this one little punch card, membership card that I've been to once, but I just collect them all in there.
You have to open it up and show it, and you don't want to have something fall out that's, oops, I didn't want to have that in there. So be careful what you have in your wallet.
All right, number four, what game show would you be super awesome at?
Game show. Well, I would like to think Jeopardy, although when I play along, I'm an abysmal failure. So, maybe Wheel of Fortune. I can guess letters. Maybe that's not even it. Maybe the dating game. If I may be dating myself with that, but maybe the dating game. No, wait. Is my wife going to see this?
I'm just noting.
Can I retract that? The newlywed game. The newlywed game.
Number five, what is the best gift anyone has ever given you?
The best gift would be the personal homemade gifts that my kids have given me over the years.
Okay.
Simply because the thought and effort that have gone into those. And they're typically something personal.
Yeah.
And so it's. I think those have been the most special for me.
So we're recording this, a week after Father's Day, or the week after Father's Day?
Yeah.
So my daughter, I've got a 12-year-old and a 3.5-year-old.
Okay.
And so my 12-year-old daughter, they gave me some little drawings and stuff for Father's Day. And I was looking at what she said, this one was from my son. And I was like, wow, he drew this. This is pretty awesome. She said, well, actually, I did it with my left hand so that it would look like this. That was actually very creative. So
yeah, creative deception.
Yeah, there you go. I was like, this could turn out bad in the future. But anyway, congratulations. The score is 732.
I was hoping for 750. Where did I mess up?
They're all completely made up. So
okay.
Well, cool. Well, let's kind of jump into the conversation a little bit about. Again, I want to talk a little bit about what you do and kind of how you got to that point. But I think the big thing that stuck out to me through some of our conversations before is. And I know that these have been big buzzwords here recently, but pivot and adapt. And that was kind of one of the things that you seem to, and maybe you don't think you're good at it, but the way that you described it over the years,
sure.
It seemed like that was a thing. It's kind of unique to what you do, that you just constantly have to adapt. So I want to kind of dive into that. But before we do, let's step back and say, what is it that you do so that people have a little bit of context?
Yeah, so I am what's known as an independent manufacturer's rep, which is different from being a salesperson or a sales rep employed by a singular company. I represent a number of different companies that are typically not conflicting. And so you're able to sell their products into different markets and hopefully maintain a level of expertise and professionalism that you're able to continue in that in that independent mode, moving forward.
So, I'm diving too far into that. Just because it's been an interesting concept, I guess. Even the years that I've been in the business, I've understood that there's the difference between independent reps versus direct reps for that work for the manufacturer. And I've often tried to figure out why would a company choose one versus the other?
Sure.
Like what is the determining process of that and like the relevancy?
Yeah, I think typically it used to be there are much more manufacturers reps were much more prevalent. They're typically brought on by smaller companies that can't afford the fixed cost of salespeople, the insurance, the expenses, or they want somebody with immediate expertise and can give them immediate exposure into a particular market. So as a manufacturer's rep, you hope to have established yourself as that expert and that person capable of taking your product and immediately getting in front of customers and end users for them. You know, company salespeople can certainly have that same expertise, but it's typically a little narrower.
Okay.
So it's that broad base that a rep gives a company.
And I guess the other thing that it just kind of hit me was also the ability for, like, you've already kind of got a built-in network.
Correct.
Right? So a manufacturer comes to you as an independent rep and says, we not only want to connect with you because of your expertise, but also your network of our customer base.
You can take us to the market immediately. Yeah. You can take us and hopefully generate sales immediately.
Where a new sales rep just for that manufacturer would have to go out and build that customer base, you almost have kind of one.
Sure. And he'd have to be trained. I mean, there's a training period.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what happens is companies, you know, train salespeople and they tend to take that training and move elsewhere.
Yeah.
With a manufacturer's rep, you've got a built-in stable salesperson, and hopefully that relationship, you know, continues to grow.
That's very interesting. So what you did, you kind of talked about this before in a couple of different ways, but it's, you know, being an independent rep, or being a manufacturer's rep like that is not one that you just like, well, this is the career path that I'm headed towards.
Right, right.
How did you get to that point? What was kind of the path to walking towards that?
Well, you're right. I mean, it's not something that you aspire to be growing up or take college courses for. I think, you know, you have to kind of be exposed to it at some point early on or later on. I grew up in the hardware security business. My father, John Santis, was president of Corbin Russwin. So when I was in middle school and high school, I learned about hardware. I spent time I grew up in Connecticut at the Berlin plant there where you had Corbin and Russwin. So I grew up with hardware in my blood. And then when I graduated college, I spent a couple years selling insurance and other products, not knowing what I was going to do. I had an opportunity to get started with a rep here in this area needed an associate, needed somebody to hire. Mm-hmm. So I went on with him and started selling. Now, I always loved to sell products. As a child, I mean, I went door-to-door selling, believe it or not, things like Christmas cards and seeds and newspaper subscriptions and all that. So selling was always something I enjoyed doing. And then the rep side of it, I just kind of got into with this individual. And then after a few years, just went off on my own.
You sold seeds?
Actually, this was a long time ago. But yeah, there was, in the back of comic books, you could actually sign up to be a seed salesman. They would send you to, you know, whether it was vegetables or flowers or whatever, and you could go door to door and sell seeds, packets of seeds. You would take orders for them. You wouldn't have them in a box or something. You would take orders and then you would, you know.
So mail order seeds. That's very interesting.
The internet killed that business for me.
That was the first time I took it from me.
Actually, seed stores killed that business. But no.
So, I thought that was interesting when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, and you had mentioned that your dad was involved in the industry, and you kind of grew up in the industry, and I'd never heard that before, never knew that. But that's an interesting perspective. You've just been around it kind of your whole life, and to kind of navigate back around, you know, it's been very interesting. And what if you've been able to see that from a unique perspective for a number of years? What is how like? In a brief summary, if possible, how have you seen
hint,
the industry change or not change?
Yeah, well, certainly the biggest change, and I think it's fairly obvious, is the consolidation that's happened over the last 15 to 20 years. When I started, every single company was an independent.
Yeah.
Yale was independent, Norton was independent, Russell and Corbin and everything, all the Asa Abloy companies, a lot of the, you know, Allegion companies, everything was independent. So it was actually a better time and an easier entree in to be a manufacturer's rep. There was just more available to you.
Sure.
And distribution was the same, at least in the contract hardware side of it. Individual contract hardware houses had specific lines.
Yeah.
That they were granted specific protected territories for as well.
Ah, okay.
And they also provided much more service, meaning their AHCs wrote specs. They had you come in to help them specify your product. It's changed now where most of the larger distributors have proliferation of lines now, of different product lines.
Sure.
So it's more incumbent on the manufacturers got more control than the distributors used to have, I would say.
That makes sense. Yep. Okay. So I want to dive into maybe more of a universal conversation that's less about the hardware side of the security world and just talk about it in general terms of business as a whole and what I would kind of classify as the bounce back, right? So when you're kind of going down a specific path and you think, hey, everything's kind of clicking away and everything's working really, really well and you know, no worries here because everything's going good. And then all of a sudden something walks in and just completely changes the trajectory of what you've been working on. And so I guess through our conversation that we were having before, it seemed like that was something as a manufacturer's representative, like you're really exposed to that at a different level than most people, that all of a sudden something can come in and just change what has been the norm for a long time. So I'm going to refer to that as the bounce back. And why I think that's applicable, I know this is a long question that I'm building up to, but why I think it's applicable is right now in this current situation is a lot of businesses have been disrupted. Like just yes. Overnight, things changed. COVID-19 came in and the economy's been disrupted and it will continue to be disrupted for a while. How do those companies then bounce back is kind of the theory that I'm working off of. And you essentially described to me a lot of ways that you've had to adapt and adjust over time. So I don't want to get, I know the buzzwords are adapt and pivot and all that stuff, but just kind of talking through that process because you have been in that situation multiple times where you've had to, I guess, adjust.
Absolutely. As a manufacturer's rep, you're operating on 30-day contracts with every single manufacturer.
Okay.
There's no long-term stability or guarantees. So it's automatically renewed every 30 days until the day it's not renewed.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Coffee Break Podcast. If this information has been helpful to you or you just really kind of like our theme song, can you help us out by rating us on whatever app you're using? And if you get really fancy, how about sharing a screenshot on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn? Okay, enough of all this. Let's get back to the conversation.
And I gradually, just through experience and kind of looking at the big picture, knew I couldn't have all my eggs in one basket. So I proceeded to kind of look elsewhere within the realm of what I was doing. You don't want to spread yourself too thin. You want to stay within, you know, your logistic travel template, but also your market template. Mm-hmm. And so I began to just bring on other product lines. For me, as a rep, I've always tried to be diversified, but I've also been very careful because you can, from a professional standpoint, encroach on other reps. Sure. And for that, from that standpoint, what mm-hmm. I've always done, it's been my credo, is I've never pursued a product line that was already being handled by another rep. Every product line that I've been able to pivot with or take on, I've been recommended for that product line from a distributor or a manufacturer has made a change ahead of time and asked me if I was interested. So I've always, you really have to rely on the professionalism that you put out there, your expertise, and you have to at some point transition. You're always going to be a salesperson. Mm-hmm. You're always going to be selling. Mm. It's the lifeblood. It's what I love. But at some point, to be successful as a rep, you have to transition into becoming more of a consultant.
Okay.
And you have to be able to provide that level of expertise, and you should accumulate that over a period of time if you've been a rep for any number of years. And so as a consultant, you become more valuable to the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
As you bring on more product lines and as you become a consultant, you become more valuable to your customer, the end user or the dealer distributor.
Sure.
And in many cases, you're then able, you know, prior when I only had one or two lines, there were some places I couldn't come in or they didn't want to see me because I didn't add any value.
Sure.
They didn't have time for me to talk about, say, a simple lock or something. But if you add more product lines mm-hmm. that are a value and are still in that same channel, then it opens up more opportunities for you to come in and get an appointment and talk to people.
So one of the things you just kind of said there is reputation. You kind of build a reputation and that's where people are going to recommend lines to you to sell. So, you know, take that into a universal thing. You're going to build a reputation where people are going to recommend customers to you.
I mean, it was just advice my father gave me early on is, you know, and this is universal advice. You do something that you love, you do it well. I mean, You want to be paid your value.
Yeah.
But if you're chasing dollars, that's not, at least that's not the method that I've used in my life. Doing something that you enjoy, doing it well, the compensation will come to you. It's karma, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
But, and then do it professionally. Again, advice he gave me was, look, if you're going to be the garbage man, nothing, be the best you can be.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to be a stockbroker, be the best you can be.
Yeah.
If you're going to work in retail, do your job and do more. And it'll come back to you eventually.
Yeah.
It ultimately will.
That's very, I want to park on that a little bit because it's interesting. I was just kind of, while you're saying all that, I was processing back because, you know, we have known each other for as long as I've been in the industry, as far as I can remember, and I've just always seen you around, always had conversation with you, and we've never really had direct dealings with each other.
Right.
But you have been focused more on adding value, creating a relationship, not just always trying to sell a product. And I can compare that to other people that I've had dealings with that anytime they call, you know, it's because they have the new widget that they're going to try to sell you in less of a relationship conversation. Right. And so it's probably, and I made a statement to you the other week when you were here, that's one of the things that kind of sticks out to me about you is the way that you go about business. Now, what you just described is that's the reason why. I never understood the philosophy behind it, but the philosophy is it's because you're working more and focusing more diligently on what you're building and less what you're taking, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I've never, even from the beginning, I've never been afraid to tell somebody, I'm not a fit for you. My products don't work for you. It's not the right situation. And yeah. I think it's always worked well in that I've built relationships. You know, I mean, there's plenty of situations it hasn't worked out, but the majority of them, people and customers appreciate that fact. They're more willing to see you. And like I said, if you come in more as a consultant and add value and help them in their decision-making, whether it's with your product or not, I mean, that's part of, I think, professionalism.
I think that's probably where the nickname Special K came from, is you're just a special individual.
Well, as I said before, you and Chris heard that nickname at a show. I don't remember it. It's not a moniker that I put on myself, but I'll gladly accept it, and we'll go with that moving forward.
I had to get it in there somewhere.
That's fine.
I have no idea why, but in my contact list on my phone, the nickname Special K.
You have me in your phone as Special K?
Yeah, well, in the nickname category.
Oh.
Yeah, it says Special K. And I don't know why I added it, but there's some story behind it I've got to remember. But anyways.
I like it.
When things change for you, you're on your 30-day contracts, which that blows my mind, by the way.
Yep.
I'll have to figure that out and unpack that later. But you're on your 30-day contracts, and then all of a sudden you get word, we're done, we're parting ways, we've made a different decision, right? We're moving on to something different, or we're bringing it back in-house. What is your response to that?
Well, I mean, there's different response. I mean, it depends on internally. My response is typically, you know, there are some that, you know, are inevitable, because they've been bought out. There's a manager coming in with a new game plan. Someone's a sales manager's brother-in-law just moved into your territory and he wants to give the line to him. I mean, I've had situations where I've had my best year ever and then they decide to make a change and go in a different direction. That's the tagline you hear in a lot in sports, in the business world. We're just going to move in a different direction. So it's certainly in a lot of cases it's similar to a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
It can be that. And well, I'm not going to put it on the same level, but a similar feeling of disappointment and separation. But you professionally, you know it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, you simply say, look, if there's anything I can do to help out, I understand you're transitioning and, you know, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
And I think if you're diverse enough, you don't immediately go out seeking to change customers or to pick up another line, but you start putting out feelers and look for other opportunities. But you can't, this industry is too small to you can't hold grudges and you can't put out negativity. So it's the life of a rep and you just hope that you've got enough in your backlog of other product lines.
And I track with that. But how do you avoid being cynical? Because that's it's one of the things that, I'm trying to dig into this because I think that there's some type of a value, there's some type of principle behind this, because what you're talking about is not an easy thing. It's like, it's a different direction. I gotta change my whole business model. No big deal. You know, how do you avoid becoming cynical in that? Because that's what a lot of people are dealing with right now. You know, whatever business that they're in, it's been disrupted in some way. How do you focus on what's next or what's to come versus becoming cynical about what happened?
I've never really consciously thought about that. I think it's just in the makeup of my personality. Other reps may have a different way of dealing with it. They may say they become cynical. Have I ever been upset and cynical about what is currently happening, if I've lost a line or what may happen in the future? Sure. But for the most part, I just continue to plow forward. I don't know any other way to put it. Mm-hmm. I don't have a mindset of, all right, I'm going to brace for this and this is what's going to happen. If you're a rep, it's happened to you. Yep. It's going to happen to you. You just trust. I've always, looked at it from the standpoint of, if you think somebody's going to do it better, Mr. Manufacturer, then God bless you. Move on. I'll move on as well. I've always had confidence in my abilities.
Yeah.
And it's, Chad, at least to this point, it's worked out. But I don't have a formula for avoiding cynicism. As a rep, you've got to, it's like a shark. You got to keep moving and keep plowing forward and remain professional in every instance.
So it's less worrying about what you lost and more focusing on what you can,
absolutely,
what the next thing is.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you take a hit. You certainly do. You have to make adjustments.
Yeah.
You have to, narrow your expenses. You have to narrow maybe your travel for a while. You have to cut back on certain things to a degree. But, you are what you are, and you've got to be outselling all the time. So, focus on the future.
Yeah. So where do you, I want to ask this question kind of a couple of different ways, I guess, but where is that philosophy built from? Is it advice from others, books that you've read, mentors that you've had in your life? Like how have you kind of arrived at that philosophy or that point?
Well, I think it's all the above, maybe not so many books, but, certainly my mentor has always been my father. And I saw him as a professional. He wasn't on the outside like I was. He was in the corporate world.
Yeah.
But the professionalism that he brought every day is something that's imprinted on me from an early age. And certainly from other people I've met in the industry, the majority who have been great professionals. I feed off of positive people all the time. As a salesperson, you kind of have to feed off the successes that you have as opposed to letting the negatives take you down. I get a great joy out of walking out of someone's office having done a good service for them or having solved an issue, and you have to kind of feed off that. So I think it's a multitude of things, but mostly from, again, the early influence I had, the early impact my father had, but then also people within the industry that have impacted me, other reps. There is a camaraderie, I think, for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get together as much anymore. Some of the shows that used to be a prerequisite and everybody attended have lessened. But I think as a group, it's a highly professional group, and we tend to energize each other.
So just kind of connecting with other people and staying, eliminating the negativity and the negative people around you and focusing more on the positive.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's everybody's individual personality too. There are other reps and salespeople who would handle it differently. Maybe they have a set paradigm that they work within, but I've never been that structured. I've always just, my personality has always been problem solving. I mean, maybe it comes from early on, maybe, playing a lot of sports and team sports. You learn how to work as a team, problem solve. You learn from your losses. Mm. You don't celebrate in your victory. You're joyful about them, but you probably learn more from losing.
Yeah.
I probably learn more from some of the negative things that have happened to me than, a big sale. But your ability to survive as a rep is more specifically based on your personality and how that's affected over the years and influence. It's a multitude of things.
And that just reminded me, you are a former collegiate athlete.
Not exactly, no.
Yeah, you're a professional collegiate athlete. That's what you, wasn't that the story that you told me?
I mentioned that I tried out for the JV basketball team at Carolina, and I made it to the last cuts and was cut by Roy Williams. Mm. So if that qualifies me in any way as saying I'm a collegiate athlete, I'll take it, but I would not say it does.
That's a pretty cool experience,
it
though.
It is. Yeah, yeah, definitely was. And my father played. I did it more as an homage to him, mm-hmm. knowing I had no chance. Well, I shouldn't say I had no chance, but knowing nothing was going to really come of it, but I did want to do it.
But you said you played with Michael Jordan.
I played in pickup games at Carolina. He was a freshman. I'm going to give my age now. He was a freshman. I was a senior.
Okay.
So we interacted a few times together. And I actually, when he came in as a freshman, mm-hmm. there was some buzz about him. And he was playing at one of the gyms on campus. So some of my friends went down. Yeah. We said, let's check out this new freshman.
Yeah.
And I watched him play a little bit. And I was like, what's the big deal? He's okay. So... You would question my judgment right there.
So what you're saying is you're friends with Michael Jordan. So next time you talk with him, if you could invite him on the podcast, that'd be great.
Okay, I will.
No, that's awesome, Keith. I really appreciate the conversation today and really kind of the thought process. I think, you know, the thing that I've experienced or observed being around you is that has been your focus. You're more on the focus on the positive side, focus on the opportunity, less of the challenge. And I think that's a lesson that we all can learn, especially in tougher times when, you know, businesses are being disrupted, that you're having to change things. Like maybe the way that you've been doing business in a certain way is just changed. Or maybe your customer base that you've had for a long period of time is changed. Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property.
Early on, 20 years ago, I made an investment in IT. I made an investment in a CRM system and an investment in a separate IT company to help me out. I really questioned it, but I did it. It was the best thing I ever did, because as a small independent company, I was able to project as a larger firm. And that was a critical turning point for me. And to this day, I've always, as you just mentioned, looked at staying abreast of technology and changing. I never go into anybody thinking I'm the sum total of all knowledge of whatever particular expertise I think I may have. Mm-hmm. I've always been willing to listen to other people, young, old, whatever, get input from them and change and morph if that was necessary. So to your point, absolutely, you can't be static, especially in this day and age.
Ah, that's a very valid point. So focusing on some of the things that you can affect right now, getting your things in order, you know, technology, having a list, that's huge. And the people that survive out of these changes are those that have been very systematic in making sure that they have a good structure and a good foundation. And then from that point that you can make those adjustments as necessary. But if you're just constantly bouncing around and then focusing on all the negative outcomes or what you can't control, focus more on what you can control.
Yeah, there's going to be opportunities moving forward. And, you know, I may not recognize them. I try to stay open to them and find out when they are and be able to, again, use your term pivot when they do come up. So, yeah, it's just, again, I think the one thing I would say about my work and what I do as an independent rep, I think the most important part of that description is independent. You are very independent. You are your own businessman. You're selling, yes. The sales side of it is important, but you are truly independent. No one's patting you on the back.
Mm.
No one's giving you a progress report. You get sales numbers. You're all commission. You know how you're performing based on what those dollars are coming in, but you are truly independent. You're out there floating by yourself. So,
but I would challenge that should... Somebody that's wanting to grow and be progressive, that's the mindset that they need to be in all the time. that they're in charge of. They're running their own business. If I'm working for somebody else, I'm still running my own business. I still am in charge of how I report, how I operate, the way that I communicate, my professionalism. I can control all that, no matter who I'm specifically reporting to. And when you operate in that way, you make a huge change on the outcome, because you're focusing more on those small details. You're focusing more on the way that you operate, less of relying on somebody else to tell you if you're doing good or not.
Absolutely. It's a great point. I think everyone should operate with that mindset that I'm an independent businessman, because then you're going to show your employer that you can operate outside the box. I guess what I was getting at is there's no one foisting on me, this is what you have to do today. This is what we expect of you tomorrow. Here's your new CRM platform. Here's your new enterprise system that we're going to be operating within. All that is, you've got to come up with all that. Sure. You've got to, your independence is you are disconnected from anyone. No one can tell you what to do. You wake up in the morning, you choose to wake up at 5 a.m. or 9 in the morning.
Yep.
You're independent. So there's a certain amount of discipline also. I think maybe that's a term we haven't used today, that it has to be inherent in you, or you need to develop it pretty quickly or you will fail.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
That may be a whole nother podcast. Discipline. I'm going to write that down real quick, Keith.
I'll come back for that one.
Yes. Yeah, that'll probably be an hour and a half. Discipline and building habits. Oh, man.
Absolutely.
Good. Okay. Well, let's wrap this one up. I appreciate you being here today. If somebody wants to get a hold of you to learn all of the wisdom that you have, what's the best way to do that?
That would be yoda.com. No, certainly, send me an email. My domain is santis.us, but keith@santis.us. Feel free to email me, and whatever expertise that I have, I'm always willing to share. I think that's important in this industry and everywhere else, is you share what you know, share your experience. We need more young people in this industry anyway. So.
That's very true.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the Coffee Break Podcast. Also, we wanted to let you know that our team puts together a weekly blog post. You can find it at locdoc.net/blog. It's guaranteed to raise your IQ by 12 points or your money back. So it's pretty much a win-win. All right, back to the conversation.
Hey, well, thank you, Keith, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you here in the studio, and really excited for the conversation. We're definitely going to have you back to talk about discipline and habits, as that seems to be something that you have done a fantastic job with over the years. For those of you who are watching or listening for the first time, hey, thank you for being here, and we want to invite you to subscribe. You can go to our website. It's lockdoc.net/podcast. There's all the links to subscribe on whatever platform you enjoy listening on, and if you're listening to this and you didn't know there was a video associated, well, you can find the same links there. You can jump over to Facebook or YouTube, subscribe there, and watch the full video version. So we have this in video and audio version every Tuesday at 9 a.m. available for you. Hopefully some valuable information that will help you in whatever area of business that you're in. Thank you again for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on the Coffee Break Podcast.